When you review a commercial real estate portfolio, you are typically trained to look for quantifiable structural flaws,
Right.
a compromised roof, deferred maintenance on HVAC systems, or maybe a restrictive ground lease. You identify the physical risk, you price it directly into your financial model, and you execute the acquisition based on those discounted cash flows.
But what happens when the ultimate structural failure does not show up on a trailing 12-month P&L?
Exactly. What happens when the fatal flaw is psychological? When it's embedded directly into the underwriter's ego and it systematically misprices every single asset in the pipeline?
That is the invisible exposure that eventually liquidates portfolios. It is a fundamental failure of objectivity that standard algorithmic underwriting, frankly, simply cannot detect.
Right. And by the end of this session, you will understand the exact mathematical and operational framework required to bypass the psychological flaw. We are analyzing an exclusive market intelligence dispatch today. It's a framework titled Carving Failures in Marble, the Elite Investor's Script.
Authored by Priyanshu or Priyata Stocker.
Correct. A premier commercial real estate and hotel investment advisor and a licensed realtor. Let's break down the core mechanics and technical hurdles of this asset landscape to understand why this specific behavior is lethal.
The mechanism of that lethal behavior is what this framework defines as the ego trap.
The ego trap.
Right. The foundational premise here is that the average investor fundamentally misinterprets the source of their own success. If we look back at the last decade, the cheap debt era, we experienced a historically unprecedented macroeconomic lift. I mean, the cost of capital was essentially zero.
Okay, let's unpack this because the math here provides a massive realization. Let's say you acquired a commercial property 5 years ago at a 6% cap rate,
Sure.
and the market naturally compressed to a 4% cap rate purely because the Federal Reserve kept interest rates artificially low. The valuation of your property absolutely skyrocketed.
Without you doing a single thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You could have executed a completely mediocre baseline business plan. You could have ignored operational inefficiencies entirely.
And you still would have exited with a substantial multiple.
Right.
That mathematical reality is where the trap is actually set. The ego trap is looking at that multi-million dollar exit and internalizing that macroeconomic lift as your own localized alpha.
You look at the spreadsheet, you see the massive internal rate of return, and you think you are a real estate visionary.
When in reality, the Federal Reserve did 90% of the heavy lifting. The danger here is that human nature dictates we carve that perceived success in marble. We build these towering monuments to our own execution skills.
But when an investment fails or underperforms,
We write that failure in sand. We let the tide wash it away rapidly to protect our fragile egos. We blame the market or the broker or the lender.
it is entirely analogous to walking into a casino, right? You hit a miraculous lucky streak at the roulette table, and you genuinely believe you have developed a proprietary algorithm for predicting exactly where the little white ball is going to land.
You proclaim yourself a roulette genius.
Exactly, while completely ignoring the massive amount of capital you lost at the blackjack table an hour prior. You brush the losses away as bad luck, while attributing the wins to pure skill.
It is a profound cognitive dissonance.
But here is the critical question. Isn't it natural human behavior to want to celebrate wins, to build momentum and confidence? I mean, why is that natural confidence so uniquely dangerous in commercial real estate underwriting?
Because confidence does not service debt.
Right.
That is the cold, hard reality of commercial underwriting. If you operate under the assumption that your previous success was entirely due to your flawless execution, you naturally begin to accept thinner margins on your next deal.
You assume your golden touch will overcome any operational hurdles.
Exactly, which leads directly to over-leverage. You authorize lazy due diligence. You stop stress testing your assumptions because you genuinely believe you have fundamentally outsmarted the market.
Complacency becomes the silent killer of your capital.
Precisely. Relying on the trophies of the cheap debt era will not fix today's mispriced cap rates. True downside protection is not built on a foundation of old wins. It is forged from the scar tissue of past mistakes.
Which means we have to look at the macro environment right now. We are seeing severe structural shifts across highly specific, specialized sectors.
The dispatch explicitly identifies the hospitality sector, industrial outdoor storage, commonly referred to as IOS, and small bay flex warehouses.
And in these specific environments, the line between disciplined underwriting and sheer market euphoria has never been thinner. Let's apply that directly to hospitality.
Let's do it.
If we look at RevPay RSO, revenue per available room trends following the pandemic, we saw a massive, unprecedented surge. It was driven entirely by revenge travel and built-up consumer savings.
Which is the exact nightmare scenario for an ego-driven underwriter.
Why is that?
Because an investor resting on their laurels looks at that post-pandemic RevPAR surge and underwrites a permanent compounding growth rate into their 10-year hold model. They project idealized historical anomalies forward as if they are the new baseline.
They completely fail to stress test against the reality of normalized demand.
Right. Or exhausted consumer savings.
Yeah.
Or aggressively rising operational costs, specifically labor and insurance premiums, which are destroying net operating income right now.
So if your downside model simply assumes a minor, say, 2% dip in RevPAR rather than a systemic protracted cash flow drought, you are not underwriting with data.
You are underwriting with hope. And hope is not a fiduciary strategy.
We see this same vulnerability in industrial outdoor storage.
Oh, absolutely.
IOS has become the darling asset class of institutional capital lately, primarily because of the low capital expenditure requirements and the high tenant stickiness.
Well, let's walk through a hypothetical disaster. You acquire an IOS site, planning to lease it to a national logistics fleet. Your ego tells you it is a guaranteed high-yield play, but you skipped the granular environmental phase 2 assessment.
And 6 months in, you discover historic soil contamination from a diesel spill.
Exactly. Or consider the municipal side of an IOS deal. You underwrite the site based on past successes, assuming standard industrial zoning applies universally.
You fail to account for a sudden local zoning dispute. Say, the municipality abruptly decides that constant 18-wheeler traffic is degrading their local infrastructure.
So they issue a moratorium on heavy truck parking. Suddenly, your entire business plan is halted. Your interest reserves are draining rapidly, and your high-yield asset is completely illiquid.
This highlights why hyper-local micro-market nuances are so absolutely critical. You cannot apply a generalized national metric to a hyper-local asset.
You really can't.
As Prey points out in this week's perspective, navigating these hurdles across the Central Ohio and broader Midwest markets demands an intensely disciplined approach. Let's look at small bay flex warehouses for a second. An ego-driven underwriter might project a 3% annual rent growth based on national industrial trends. But what if local employer data in that specific Midwest submarket indicates flatlining wages and a contraction in small business formation?
If you aren't looking at the hyperlocal reality, your spreadsheet is just a work of fiction.
Right. Which brings us to the concept of the postmortem.
Yes. Imagine an adaptive reuse project that hits all of its financial targets. It reaches stabilization, the exit multiple is achieved, and it is incredibly easy for the sponsor to publish a press release claiming 100% execution success.
But if you were looking at that adaptive reuse project that just made a fortune, how do you actually separate your own brilliant execution from sheer dumb luck?
Clinical objectivity is the only way to separate the two. How Pre saw what the spreadsheets missed is by recognizing the invisible variable.
The invisible variables.
Right. What if your brilliant adaptive reuse project only succeeded because a sudden local zoning shift unexpectedly locked out a major competitor from developing down the street?
Or what if you had encountered an unexpected municipal utility delay that pushed stabilization back by 9 months?
If that utility delay had actually materialized, draining the interest reserves while the property sat vacant, the internal rate of return would have completely collapsed.
The entire deal would have been a massive loss.
Exactly. And acknowledging those invisible variables introduces the required operational shift, what the framework calls the sand approach.
The sand approach. Break that down.
You pocket the returns from the successful deal. You distribute the capital to your limited partners. You acknowledge the financial win. And then deliberately, you let the tide wash it away.
You force your entire acquisitions team to start every single new deal at absolute zero.
You look at the postmortem of the successful deal and clinically recognize where your operational thesis was actually right versus where you were simply bailed out by a favorable zoning variance or falling interest rates.
You completely wipe the slate clean so your ego has absolutely nothing to stand on.
Exactly.
But here is where the underwriting actually gets weird.
Moving on to our next major pillar, how this exposure was entirely neutralized. Through what the text defines as the marble approach.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Writing your success in sand cleans the slate. It cures the ego. But a clean slate alone doesn't give you a roadmap or a defense mechanism for the next acquisition.
It doesn't.
If success belongs in the sand, what belongs in the marble? The answer is your failures.
What's fascinating here is that the core methodology is treating every underwriting error, every missed projection, and every brutal market cycle as permanent institutional memory.
You study the failure, you document the exact mechanics of why it happened, and you let it permanently alter your acquisition checklist.
It is exactly like a software patch for your brain.
Right. Every time the operating system crashes due to an unforeseen variable, like that iOS zoning dispute we talked about, or the hidden environmental contamination, the resulting code update makes the entire network stronger.
It makes it more resilient and fundamentally smarter for the next market cycle.
That mechanism is the definition of carving failures in marble.
The average ego-driven investor attempts to hide an underperforming hospitality asset. They try to bury the complex zoning riddle that they mispriced.
They write the failure down in sand, they hope the limited partners forget about it, and they aggressively move on to the next deal to try and make up for the loss.
The elite investor, however, dissects the corpse of that bad deal. If a specific structural problem in a small bay flex warehouse drained their capital, that exact scenario becomes a hard, non-negotiable stress test parameter in every single future financial model.
Let me push back on this, though, because it is a very common counter-argument you hear in private equity boardrooms.
Sure, go ahead.
Does dwelling on failures to this extreme degree breed risk aversion? If you carve every single failure, every misstep, and every disaster permanently into your underwriting model, does it make your acquisitions team freeze up?
That's the fear.
Right. Do you end up completely missing out on high-yield, lucrative opportunities simply because your models have become too conservative?
The framework addresses this dynamic directly, actually. It draws a massive fundamental distinction between fear and wisdom. Carving failures in marble is not about wallowing in regret.
It's not about cultivating an atmosphere of fear within your firm.
No, it is entirely about establishing hard, mathematical, non-negotiable boundaries.
It actually provides structural freedom.
The math proves that out.
Yeah.
It gives you the structural freedom to confidently say no to a bad deal.
Right. When you pass on an acquisition that looks mathematically viable on a surface-level spreadsheet, but it violates a hard-earned, permanent lesson from your institutional memory, you are preserving your powder.
You are keeping your capital ready, highly liquid, and fully deployed for when the truly mispriced, asymmetric risk-reward opportunity finally appears.
Pre's boots-on-the-ground approach routinely demonstrates that the market is a constantly shifting environment.
The underwriting models that survive over decades are not the ones built on optimism.
They are the ones constantly updated by hard-earned, worst-case empirical data.
Exactly. Which brings us to a direct audit of current operations for anyone deploying capital today. Look closely at your firm's underwriting models over the next quarter.
Look at your sensitivity analysis. Are your stress testing parameters based on the idealized blue sky scenarios of your best past deals from the cheap debt era?
Or are they heavily insulated by the absolute worst case realities you have witnessed or personally experienced in the trenches of the market?
Consider the alternative. If you lose capital or years of your time on an acquisition, but you intentionally erase the memory of why it failed, just to save your own ego.
You have effectively paid the tuition but skipped the class.
Exactly. You absorb the heavy financial loss without extracting a single ounce of the corresponding intellectual value.
That perfectly encapsulates Priyanshu Adhathakar's perspective as a fiduciary advisor. True commercial real estate investing is not just about calculating bricks, mortar, and square footage.
It is about looking at the macroeconomic and hyperlocal reality exactly as it is, not as we desperately wish it to be.
True fiduciary advisory means having the immense discipline to walk away from a deal that looks incredibly lucrative on paper, but fails to respect the permanent lessons of previous cycles.
If you want to build a portfolio that truly stands the test of time, you must keep your slate clean, your ego fundamentally in check, and your underwriting razor sharp.
You write your successes in sand so you never get complacent, and you carve your failures in marble so you never pay the same tuition twice.
It is, at its core, pure stoicism applied directly to asset management. Let the historical wins keep you humble and nimble, and let the carved stones of past operational challenges build the fortress that protects your downside.
Well said.
So if elite investing is essentially applied stoicism, keeping your ego in check and your slate clean so you can see the data clearly, how might applying this exact marble and sand philosophy change the way you evaluate a recent personal or professional setback this week?
Look back at your most recent miscalculation, whether that was in a spreadsheet or in a boardroom.
What critical lesson have you been quietly writing in sand, hoping it just washes away, that actually needs to be permanently carved in marble? Something to think about the next time you are closing a deal or having the wisdom to walk away from one.
Indeed.
That wraps up our briefing.
You've got the perspective. Now it's time to drive the news forward. To ensure you never miss a market shift, tap subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen. If today's insights are going to impact your strategy, share this episode with a colleague or investment partner who needs to see the big picture. For actionable guides, newsletter subscriptions, and direct advisor consultation, head over to bearinvestors.com. Thank you for listening. We'll watch the market closely. Until next week.